Charles Crocker said later, "I built the Central Pacific." Collis Huntington, Leland Stanford, Theodore Judah, and Mark Hopkins could say the same or something near it. For sure, Crocker had lots of help and people to point the way, but he was the one who could claim without blushing that he built it. Born in Troy, New York, on September 16, 1822, Crocker commenced selling apples and oranges at 9 years of age, then carrying newspapers. "I was always apt at trade. When a boy, I would swap knives and could always get ahead. I was a natural leader in everything." He moved to Vermont to make a living, but "I was too fast for that country. Everything there was quiet and staid. You didn't dare laugh all day Sunday until sundown came." He struggled with poverty, working 16 hours a day for $11 a month. He never went to any school beyond 8th grade. In his 20s, he was certain he could do whatever was required at any job or trade. He was about 5 feet 10 or 11 inches tall, with smooth, clear skin, blue eyes, a high forehead, and a tremendous appetite. He was, in many ways, a typical American. In 1849, he got gold fever and gathered together his 2 brothers and 4 other young men. He purchased 4 horses and 2 wagons, and his party made its way to South Bend, Indiana, where the members spent the winter working to make some money. In the spring, they took off for St. Louis. At Quincy, Illinois, on the bank of the Mississippi, Crocker learned that the Missouri River was still frozen up, so he used the enforced wait to lay in a supply of corn, which he had the young men shell. Then he took the corn down to St. Louis with instructions for the others to make their way overland with the horses and wagons through Iowa to the Missouri River. In St. Louis, he purchased more goods and set off on the first steamer that ascended the river that spring. Near Council Bluffs, Crocker reunited with his men. They were all appalled at the price of supplies and food. Flour was $25 a barrel, and scarce at that. They were offered $3 a bushel for their shelled corn, but turned it down. Crocker insisted on staying on the east bank for 10 days to let the horses fatten up on the grass and to wait for the grass on the west bank to grow high enough to pasture the horses. Finally, on May 14, they rafted the river and, the next day, started on our trip, leaving civilization behind us. Crocker's foresight was rewarded. Thanks to the shelled corn in one of the wagons, the party could travel faster than those who depended on grass alone. When they got to the Platte River, the road was lined with teams, so much so that they were always in view. Crocker's party made about 30 miles a day, in part thanks to his leadership. "They would all gather around me and want to know what to do," he later said. Once, when one of his horses strayed away, he went looking and found the horse. The men who were supposed to be looking after the animal were sitting on the banks of the river playing cards. Crocker brought them to the camp, called for all the cards, burned them, and gave a blistering lecture. "We are going across the plains. We don't know where we are going. We don't know what is before us. If we don't reserve all our power, we might not get to California. It won't do to play cards. We must have our wits about us, watch our horses, and keep everything in ship shape." The Crocker party was going up the Platte River on its northern bank. The Platte, as everyone who traveled it then or now knows, runs 1 mile wide and 1 inch deep, with innumerable sandbars and willow stands and a constant shifting of channels. It was and is immensely picturesque and tremendously irritating to those who had to cross it. Crocker did not. He was on the Great Plains of North America, which stretched out forever under an infinity of bright blue sky, except when a storm hit, cutting the vision down to nothing. The plains were flat or gently rolling. Robert Louis Stevenson described Nebraska. "We were at sea, there is no other adequate expression, on the plains. I spied in vain for something new. It was a world almost without a feature, an empty sky, an empty earth, front and back. The green plain ran till it touched the skirts of heaven. Innumerable wild sunflowers bloomed in a continuous flower bed, and grazing beasts were seen upon the prairie at all degrees of distance and diminution. In this spacious vacancy, this greatness of the air, this discovery of the whole arch of heaven, this straight, unbroken prison line of the horizon."